Welcome to episode 14 of the Music Man Project podcast. My name is David Stanley, known as The Music Man, and I run The Music Man Project, a charity which promotes accessible music education across the UK and around the world for people with learning disabilities. No matter how driven or talented they are, everyone needs someone to believe in them, to share their vision and to take risks on their behalf. Not that I would dare compare myself to this great man, but just as the composer Joseph Haydn had Prince Esterhazy, I have Mark McCowens, General Manager of Southend Mencap. Mark and I shared a belief that the Music Man Project should build upon what I had developed during the preceding decade at the Saturday Southend Mencap Music School. I had learnt during that time that education, enjoyment and opportunity could magically unlock the innate musicality in everyone, regardless of their disability. Mark valued my ambition and encouraged me to follow my dreams. It was the same as back in 2000, when I had proposed a Saturday morning music school to the Southend Mencap president, the late Joe Dorado. Now the two men are wildly different in many ways, but in this they are the same. They supported, they encouraged, and they trusted me. Without Mark, there would be no Music Man Project. And there'd be no Music Man Project podcast. I hope you enjoy meeting the Music Man's original boss. Well, I'm delighted, and it's about time, really, that we have a very, very special guest here on the Music Man Project podcast. It's Southend Mencap's General Manager, Mr. Mark McCowens, everyone.
Hello there, David, and hello, everybody. And, I'm delighted to be here. Where things have come from, I'm sure we're going to sort of talk all about it. The fact that we're now doing something very technically minded, which I'm completely I'm completely technophobe. from the days of just trying email out. So this is fantastic. So I'm looking forward to this chat.
Wow, and it's been what a journey it is. And we'll talk about how it all began. But what I want to do, Mark, just to tell the listeners, so you are the General Manager of Southend Mencap. And as hopefully everybody knows, Southend Mencap is the reason there is a Music Man Project. It's the headquarters of the Music Man Project. It is the original Music Man Project. And Mark, everybody, is my boss. So I'm on my best behaviour here in the podcast because Southend Mencap runs the Music Man Project here in Southend and Essex. But Mark, how did you first become involved with learning disabilities?
I'll try and shorten the story down, but it goes back to about 1999. I was working for HSBC Card Services. And I was just bored with doing the same thing day in, day out, and I needed something else. And yeah. I remember being up on a train to Sheffield one day, and I was the only one in that carriage who was not on a laptop or a mobile phone. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be part of this going forward. I was in a supervisory role at the time.
Yeah.
I remember going back to the bank, telling my manager, don't put me on any managerial courses.
Yeah.
This isn't my life going forward. I don't know what I want. And then I see a tiny little advert of about three lines in the Lee Times.
Ah.
Advising of the start of the Southend Mencap Sports Club starting in January 2000.
Right.
I had no previous experience with the learning disabled. I knew nothing about them.
Mm.
But because of my sporting background, I had an idea of what it might be like. So I thought, I'll give it a go.
Mm.
Went along. This is where you and I first, indirectly meet because I was, the role I was given, because I was the eldest volunteer there, I was given the role of marking the register and taking everyone's £1 as they arrived.
Ah.
And I'm not joking, the first person who arrived was Tony Pheasant.
Was he really? Isn't that ironic?
He was striding down, I'm Tony, hands his pound out, shoot straight in. That was my first experience properly of anybody with a learning disability.
I never knew that.
Tony literally was the first person I met.
And Tony Pheasant, for everybody listening, was the inspiration for me to do music, to get involved, to even go along to that Southend Men Cap, you know, initial meeting about, you know, how you could get involved. And he was the inspiration. He was the one student that then turned into 200 at the Albert Hall. So isn't it funny? Yeah. Tony Pheasant was also an important figure for you.
He was the first. And I remember, the sports club ran for 2 hours. I was outside for about an hour because that's what the coordinator of the club suggested I do, because they sort of turned up at various times, which over the years I've now worked out, is what happens.
Yes.
And after about an hour, I then went into the sports hall. It was really quite packed, and I didn't have a clue what I was doing. I just sort of stood on the sidelines. I felt like a square peg in a round hole, but all I knew was I was going back the week after.
Right.
Over the next 6 months, I started to get more involved in leading some of the sessions.
Yes.
And just found that there was a connection, and there was, I think, myself, now this is more meaningful than just, you know, the 2 hours on a Saturday afternoon. This is far more meaningful than anything I was doing at the bank.
Yes.
Then forward wind to the start of 2005. I was still at Smash. I'd been volunteering at a couple of other learning disability groups. And Marilyn, who was the GM of Mentor
right.
at the time,
yes.
I used to just go in with the weekly subs for Smash.
Right.
And she just turns to me and says, I'm leaving soon. Do you want to apply for my job?
Wow.
I was waiting for my redundancy for the bank to come through, because I got offered that in the summer of 2004.
Right.
But at the time, there was no date confirmed. And then a week after Marilyn tells me that, I get confirmation that my redundancy is going to happen at the end of April 2005. The timing was just too perfect. So after a bit of a heart-to-heart with my mum to confirm that could I actually do this job, I applied. As I say, the rest is history. It timed in perfectly. I was able to leave. I took my redundancy, took 2 weeks off, and started on the 9th of May 2005.
Which is my birthday, of course, the 9th of May. But it's wonderful, and a similar story to mine is, you know, in that respect, everything just fits, and it was meant to be, and it all comes together. And around the time that you were then starting with the sports club was around the time that I was starting to do those one-off workshops, and got to know Marilyn myself, and then you became general manager. And then, you took on a sort of a portfolio of the music school that we'd been running for a few years then. And then the Mods was with Southend Men Cap at that point, was it?
No, at the time we didn't have Mod. We had another drama group.
Right.
I sort of first met you later in May of that year, that 2005, when Marilyn was taking me around the clubs that we had at the time.
Ah, yes.
And she took me to a music school, and I was, you know, what to make of it, because, you know, I was only like a month, a few weeks into the role, so
yes,
I didn't really know what I was supposed to be doing. But later that year, if you recall, we had the first large scale concert, because it was the Golden Jubilee year,
right?
And you did a big set with music school, but there was our former drama group that had the infamous goose stepping part of the act that evening. So hence we never had, and not long after that, that's when I found out about Mods that weren't going to be taken over by when Maybrook closed.
That's right, I remember Maybrook, yes.
Mods actually came to us in January 2006.
Wow.
But it was just starting to get under, getting the idea of, you know, of what we had. But that first large-scale concert that there was a majority of music school took most of the show, but most of the special schools were there. Mushroom Dance Company, as they were called then, they were there as well.
Gosh.
But I stood on from the side and thought, we've got something here.
Yes.
I don't know what I can do with it, because I knew you were, had a very secure job, etc. I thought myself, right, once I get my feet properly under the table, work out what I'm actually doing, then maybe at some point in the future could we do more with this?
Right. So even then you were having ideas about how it could grow from that sort of weekly music school into something much bigger.
Yeah. Right. But as I said, you know, because you were deputy head at Eastwood, I thought, well, how am I going to sort of prize it? So I just left it alone. a couple of years later, actually, that there's a document on my PC that I did in 2008, and it's still on my PC.
Wow.
Of what if we could ever get our own centre?
Yes.
How could we utilise it? And it involved a full-time music provision there, full-time drama, a few other things. And so when you then turned to me
in
September of 2010...
Right, was that what it was? Yeah.
The most enjoyable part of my week is my 2 hours.
Yes, I remember saying that. Yeah.
What else could I do? Then we arranged to meet at yours later that year, and I showed you what I'd had on my computer for 2 years.
It's amazing, isn't it? And that was the beginning of the Music Man project. And and there's one thing that I want to say, and you know, I often praise my guests here on the podcast, as you've probably heard. But your style of management at the beginning was quite unusual for me, because I've been used to quite a top-down, directive, very controlled, very prescriptive. And when I, you know, got to know you more, I could see you were a sort of manager that trusted people, that believed in people. And that if you thought you had the right person in the post, I'm sure you wouldn't just do it as anybody, if you saw that there were the right people in the post, you really gave them every encouragement to absolutely fly with what they were doing creatively. You were way before your time on that, because I can't express how important that has been for me to then grow and develop this Music Man project and to what it's become now. There are not many leaders of an organisation and bosses. You know, I'm employed by Southend Mencap to do my teaching in Southend. All this other stuff, the charity stuff, the UK and the international stuff, is something that I've always done in my own time, and now it's a separate charity. But the bread and butter of my life is Southend Mencap, and it's been unbelievable. So I just wondered whether that's something that you learned from somewhere else, whether you just decided how to approach your leadership. You know, can you give us an indication about management?
As much as the 16 and a half years at HSBC was a struggle and a grind, I did learn some things, and I learned from all the managers I had.
Yes.
And there was two that really struck out in how they... in the bank, there was rules and regulations galore. Probably as you can relate to at the school.
Yes.
But even for, we were in the financial situation, and, there was rules on top of rules and regulations, etc.
Yes.
And there was two or three managers I had over the years who allowed a little bit of freedom.
Mm.
And they were the ones that I was happy working for.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, and so when I took over, I thought, right, I know which managers I'm not going to follow.
Yes.
Let's see how I can sort of bring what I like about being managed into this role.
Yes.
But also at the same time, because I've been volunteering for 3 or 4 years as well,
yes.
I knew what it meant to be a volunteer. And at one of the other places where I volunteered, they started to treat the volunteers like staff, which I didn't like.
No.
Because volunteers give their time up freely.
Yes.
And there should be a distinct line between how you treat volunteers and how you treat staff.
Yes.
Give the volunteers, obviously, the blank paper as well, like I gave you and all the staff.
Mm.
But obviously be mindful, that they're giving their time freely. So
yes.
Accept that and allow that. And, that's where the trust between an organisation and volunteers begins.
Yes.
And there was the one organisation that was starting to treat us like staff and wanted contracts signed, etc. And I just wandered off, and two or three other volunteers did, because that's not... So I learned from that as well. But, it was predominantly how I was treated by two or three managers at the bank. I thought, let's try this here. When I've got experts like yourself, I've got experts like Andrew for Mods and Showstoppers.
Yes.
I know I'm not going to be able to tell you how to do your roles, because that's not my area of expertise.
Sure.
My area of expertise is coordinating everything, finding money from somewhere, leaving it to the experts, because I saw so many managers at the bank who thought they knew everything and tried to run things, and it just didn't work.
No, you're absolutely right. And I have to say that what we're doing now and what the other groups you mentioned are doing is testament to that approach. And things have got done so much quicker. I mean, we've had meetings with large organisations, millions of pounds worth of turnover, and all they do is talk about 3 or 5 year development plans before they actually do anything. We are an organisation that has done, there's no need going over it again, we've done some pretty amazing things together, you and I, from those conversations at the beginning to where we are now. But they've happened so quickly and on really small budgets compared with the sort of money that I know gets flown around for these sort of things. And they don't even get anywhere near what we've achieved. And I'm probably one of the things I'm most proud of.
What I will say at this point as well, I want to sort of jump in, and it was your, because I put you in quite a tricky situation, because we were initially talking about, you know, I was going to try and apply for 1 year's funding.
Yes.
For the first year.
Yes.
So that we had something to build on.
Yes.
And I realised that wasn't going to happen. I re-evaluated and looked at, well, you're going to bring a lot of students. Once they know that you're full-time, you're going to bring a lot of students. It's the same ethos I used when I offered Andrew to start Showstoppers.
Yes.
You've got a great following, so the numbers potentially could allow a level of self-sufficiency to start with.
Yes.
So I needed to convince you and show you my confidence that despite you having an incredibly secure position at Eastwood, come over to us where I could guarantee you your first 3 months' wages, and then after that, we'll wing it. So you had to sort of see my confidence in that, and I was I actually preferred that, and it was the start of me starting the self-sufficiency strategy for the society as a whole, because I saw how it worked with Music Man. I thought this can actually work full scale. So that was the start of it. But yeah, you needed you were a catalyst for that as well, in that you left your incredibly secure job at the school and came to work for us here, and away we went.
And as I always tell people, and I tell everybody again now, I have the best job in the world. Because you can relate to that, because of the people that we help, the families that we work with, the musicians that I teach are just amazing. And because of you, I have freedom within a structure. There's huge trust and respect. I always feel that I can contact you, text you with concerns, and I know I'm going to get a nice, rational, positive, encouraging response back. And those things are worth their weight in gold. But the other thing is that I knew that if it was a failure, it would have been down to me. And if it was a success, certainly in the early stages, it's down to a whole team now. But in the early stages, if this was going to work, it was also down to me. And I kind of like that, and I'd do exactly the same again. You have more ownership over you, more control over your future when it's down to you, and that just means whether you can be bothered to do the hard work, because I think it's all just down to how much effort people put in.
You even performed at the end of the pier for 24 hours just to get enough money
to
get the instruments in advance.
Yes, that's true. Well, let's pause there just for one moment and listen to Note by Note, a classic Music Man Project song.
Music Man sets my rhythm free.
Now, you are busy, though, in other things, Mark. So what is a typical day in the general manager, a life of a general manager of a charity like Southend Mencap? Apart from overseeing things like Music Man and Showstoppers and Mods, what else do you do, Mark?
Well, I mean, typical day. This is where it's so different from the bank. This is why I needed to leave the bank back then, because when just to touch on that, each day I'd go in the bank and I'd have that report to do and then this report to do, and then that happened at certain times. It was the same day in, day out. I come in here and there's no 2 days are the same.
No.
I've overseen all the projects, because when I started we had 7 projects. It's now over double that.
Wow.
And one of the things I'm actually quite proud of is the fact that in my time we've not had to close any activity at all.
Wow.
Which, when you sort of look at the community as a whole, the level of services that have been forced to close just due to no money around. So many of our students have sort of lost just general little weekly clubs that they used to go to, and the majority of those aren't around. So because I've got the financial background from the bank, I'm very closely, I always watch the budget for each project virtually each day, even though I could probably sort of recite it backwards now, but it's just sort of something that's built in me.
Yes.
Make sure that all the money's there, check that if there are funding bids that have been agreed are nearing an end. Obviously, I need to report back to that funder.
Yes.
Is there a chance of a new funding bid? Finding out other sort of ways of maybe sort of expanding what we do. With yourself and with Andrew, and I've got the rest of my team here. It's finding out when I need to sort of assist them, make decisions for them. I like to sort of think of myself as that I trust all my staff in, you know, what they do. But when it comes down to like the financial side making sure they're not sort of crossing the line, can we introduce something like this? And the freedom I give you guys is only down to the freedom I'm given by the committee.
You mentioned that before.
Chris, as the chairman, has given me so much trust, because normally you have a charity. It's the committee that runs it, and then then the general manager or chief executive. And it's sort of a bit reversed here, because they've given me that much freedom over the years.
Yes.
Everything has sort of worked. I've sort of been a bit thinking that way, but it's only because
it has worked.
I've got a phenomenal team.
Yeah, but it has worked. You're so right.
One other thing I do like doing as well is that we've got, as you know, for the last 2.5 years, we've had our novel coffee shop.
Yes.
And where needed, I will go and help out in there. I mean, I can do the food. people haven't complained yet with bits of finger in their bagel, which is all right. when I'm sort of cutting that up, but it's nice to take a little break away from the desk, and sort of, because we have a number of our students working in there,
yes,
but also many more coming in. So it's a way to sort of keep and meet them. So, there's not a typical day.
Right.
But it sort of revolves around sort of that in a way. I know it's not much of an answer, but that's me.
No, and it works. And not only has it been shown to work because of all the, you know, the progress, and whether it's the performances or everything, you have just recently been nominated for an award. Can you tell us about that and what that means for the society?
I thought it was a joke, first of all. I needed to sort of check, it's the Inclusive Companies Awards.
Congratulations.
If you sort of go to their website, they do, you know, there's some nice sort of glossy pictures from last year's one. I don't know who or how I've been nominated, but I've been nominated as the Champion of Inclusivity, I think is the actual title. It's quite a long title.
Yes.
And when I sort of liaise back with this organisation, I first of all said, no, is this legit, or is someone having me on? And no, it is legit. And I was asked to sort of do like a little questionnaire and then myself, basically sell myself so that the judges can
have a look.
Because I think after the 14th of August, that's when the judges will sit down and review who of those who've been nominated, who's going to go forward for an award. So, so it actually meant that whereas what I sort of see on your email sign-up, there's all these other sort of little logos that are attached. I mean, I've now been able to attach one to my email sign-up for the Inclusive Companies one.
Because
it's the only one I've got. whoever nominated me, if they happen to be listening to this, thank you very much. It meant an awful lot. I felt incredibly proud and incredibly humbled that someone thought they'd do it. Because I remember many years ago, when we had the Olympics in the UK.
Yes.
And they were sending out the nominations out for people to run with the torch.
Oh, yes.
While it was doing its rounds around the country.
Yes.
And I remember Jackie Camacho had nominated me to run with it. I didn't get chosen,
no.
I understand, because there were so many other sort of better ones.
Yeah.
And I'd only just started the marathon running, etc. But I felt really sort of humble after I've been barely 5 years in the role, and she felt to sort of nominate me for that. So whoever's nominated me for this, huge thanks. Thank you very much.
It's so important, isn't it? It's encouraging, it's motivating. And I do believe these things open doors, by people even just seeing that sign off on your email will then start taking notice and thinking, oh, is this an organisation I need to be helping or sponsoring or getting involved with? So I think they're really, really important. Now, you mentioned the marathons there, and I was going to talk about this today because it's really important that everybody knows that Mark doesn't just sit in an office doing the financing and sort of overseeing all these creative people in his organisation. He will also go out there and raise money for his society because Mark is quite a famous marathon runner. Can you tell us about your marathons, Mark?
I will sort of say that I'm now sort of officially retired. When I did the 4 in 4 days into 2018, that pretty much did me in.
four marathons in 4 days, everyone.
I started it in, I did my first one was the London Marathon in 2011.
Yeah.
Prior to that, I never joined. If you speak to people who do running and those who don't, you either enjoy running or you don't get it, you hate it with a passion. And up until that point, I didn't see the point in running.
Right.
But I was entered into a 10K race in 2010.
Right.
Started running, and literally the first time I set foot on the pavement, I blew myself up in about 30 seconds flat, but I really enjoyed it. and immediately after just that, I registered for the 2011 London Marathon.
Wow.
Didn't get through the ballot, but I was so deep into the training, I thought, oh, let's see if I can get a spot through Royal Main Cup. I'm thinking, I run Southend Main Cup, they can let me in. And they didn't, but I needed to make an agreement with them that, once I reached the level of funding that they needed, anything above, I could have, which they agreed to. Because and so I did the London Marathon in 2011, and then over the next 7 years, I think the total has reached 38. I think that's where my number finished.
Wow.
But I did three other fundraisers. I did a couple of years ago, I did my first two in consecutive weekends when I did London again, but the week before I did Brighton.
Yes, I remember.
And again, raising money for the society.
Yes.
Then I did the very enjoyable 4 in 4 weekends. It was sort of supposed to be on 4 different continents, but actually I couldn't get the full gun, so it was Paris, Manchester, you could class that as its own continent, Boston and London.
Yes.
And the support I got for that one was really overwhelming. That one on its own raised over £5,000, which I was actually quite staggered.
Mark, is that the one where you sang High Low Middle during the London Marathon and you came and joined us?
That was London was the last one, and the arranger I spoke to Royal and said, right, I know you have these cheering spots, and for people who don't know, at the London Marathon you see all the charities at various points around the course, and they actually have to request certain spots to sort of put their fans at.
Yes.
And I remember the previous three London Marathons I did, and every other charities, you know, cheering spots around the course were really full and lively.
Mm.
And the Royal Menket ones, it was like two person and a dog.
I know.
And it was quite wonderful.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, if they've got us, if I can get this spot on mile 25, or as close to mile 25 as I could, and have you guys, the music man lot there, then that will give me something to sort of run towards. Because I thought that, you know, I'd travel back from Boston literally on the Tuesday, because the Boston one was run on the Monday.
Mm.
I do get affected quite a lot by jet lag. I'm sort of in a comatose state for about 3 days afterwards. So I knew I'd have literally a day and a half to get myself ready.
Yes.
So I thought if I could have you and a group of you guys there sort of playing.
Yeah.
But actually on the day, I felt so alive, so with it. And in my head, this might sound a bit daft to some people, but as I only had to run in my head 25 miles, stop. Come and sing with you guys for a bit, then the last mile would be just, you know, like a lap of honour.
Yes.
And it was probably the easiest marathon I've ever run. I was so comfortable. And as I'm running along, I'm looking out for you guys. I knew you were opposite Cleopatra's Needle.
Yeah.
I think, but as I've got a sense of direction that's woeful, I'm thinking, what if I miss them? What if I don't pass them? And I have to then turn around and come back. Running against the flow, like doing whips in a swimming pool sort of thing. But as I came out of the last tunnel, there you are. Couldn't very well miss you.
No, we were playing music.
I was only going to do like one or two songs, but I was so enjoying it so much. I stayed, I think, for 15 minutes.
I know. And some of that was captured by Paul Carpenter, I think, because there's a little short film on our website, musicmanproject.com. So have a look at that. Great times and a remarkable achievement to be able to sing with the music band after four marathons.
Then I came up with that ludicrous idea of doing four in 4 days for each Music Man project that was up at the time, even though obviously Sussex hadn't really started then. So I did the first one here. I then went to the next day, did the one in Kent, next day did the one in Malden, and we came back here.
Yes.
And it was only halfway through the fourth one that I was in trouble, physically. But seeing everyone at the end for that concert, including my mum, there were tears.
No surprise. Tremendous achievement, tremendous achievement.
Sadly, though, that actually that killed my interest in running after that.
Did it?
I am now officially retired. So anyone else who wants to do marathon running for the society, please do. I'll give you tips, but I won't join in what I'm done.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if anybody will be following in your footsteps soon, but at least they can come to you for help. Oh, Mark, it's been brilliant talking to you. You are. As I said, I think during my interview with Margaret Rimmer in the last episode, you know, absolutely fundamental to the beginning, the middle, and the success and the future of the Music Man Project all across the country and indeed the rest of the world. Because without you and without Seth M. Menkap, without Marilyn, the first general manager that started things up just shortly before you came, there would not be anything that's going on now like there is at the Music Man Project. So on behalf of everybody, can we just thank you for everything that you continue to do and for your, you know, amazing leadership?
No, thank you. But also the thanks goes to you and all the students as well. In terms of, this sort of goes back to when we first sitting around your dining room table.
Yeah.
With Sarah's Victoria Sponge.
Legendary.
And near the end of that meeting, one of the things we sort of touched on was, what about, you know, could we potentially be, encourage others to open up their own, like, music school around the country? And now sort of looking back at, we didn't know how that would work and whether it was even possible.
I know.
Royal Menkap a few summers later.
Yes.
To just ask, you know, would you entertain providing local Menkaps with funding for instruments?
Yes.
Because we could provide the free teaching and resources.
Yes.
And they weren't interested, but with the Salvation Army that literally jumped on board no more than a month later.
Yes.
And seeing the numbers of Music Man hubs that are now around the country.
Yes.
That was more your idea than mine.
That's right.
And just the belief that following the model that you started to run down here, that others would follow it. So, and you had great, because I had great belief in what you were doing and how the students would react.
Yes.
Then you had sort of the great belief that others would hopefully eventually follow. You know, I've all sort of liked you a little bit, like the Pied Piper, and the other countries are following. The other parts of the country are following. So,
and from where we were
initially thinking, I think we thought that maybe if we could get five set up.
Yes.
After the first sort of 6 years, but.
No,
I think what you're on about 14 at the moment. Or
yes, and it's growing, and the pandemic has sort of put a brakes on it. But there's lots of others, certainly with the Salvation Army, that I believe are going to be starting up, you know, soon. So it's just grown beyond beyond my wildest dreams. But I've got a funny feeling that, you know, you had all this sort of in your mind, as you say, from 2008. So it's amazing.
Well, I didn't think it would go to sort of this extent this quickly. And that's sort of testament to you. So you say, you know, you've got the best job in the world. But so have I. I mean, I don't see this as a job. This is a hobby.
Yes. Yes.
And when I've got people like yourselves and Andrew Green, Alison and Myra and Karen, Robin and Lynn, etc., it makes my role so much easier because you all have such an amazing bond with all the students that they just want to benefit from what you guys can provide them.
Yeah. They're lovely. And that's right. You're right. You're right to finish, actually, with the students and their families. The people that we work with, I describe as the best of humanity, and they truly are. And I adore them all, as you know. They're wonderful. So, listen, once again, thank you, Mark. And I hope it's been a pleasurable experience appearing on our podcast.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Smash it. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Music Man Project podcast. We would like to finish with a lovely performance of our theme song, Music is Magic, featuring Gemma Andrews on flugelhorn. Thanks to my wonderful producer, John Webber. I'm David Stanley. Till next time, it's goodbye.